Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for Monday, October the 11th, 2021. This is Air Force veteran David Corey, along with Richard Hurley. We have two special guests with us this evening, Amy Fairweather and Mark Walker from well-known organization Swords to Plowshares, so please stay tuned. First, though, let's go over to Richard Hurley. Hello, Richard.
Hey, David. Good evening, and good evening, everybody out there. Yeah, we've got two great guests tonight, Amy and Mark. I want to remind everybody that this is a call-in show, so please, during the show, if you want to give us some feedback about our conversations with Amy and Mark, please do so. We'd love to hear from you. Our number there is 1-888-627-6008. Again, that number is 1-888-627-6008, and throughout the show, we'll try to give you that number so that if you didn't write it down or you don't remember it, you can still call in. Now back to David.
Thank you, Rick. Our two guests this evening work for Swords to Plowshares, a California organization helping veterans since 1974. Amy Fairweather is the Director of Policy, and Mark Walker is the Deputy Director for East Bay Programs. They are with us today to talk about their organization's many programs to help military veterans. Welcome, Amy and Mark.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yep. Good to be here.
Well, it's our privilege. Thanks for joining us. Now, there's so much we can discuss. Amy, why don't we start with the history of Swords to Plowshares? How and when did it begin?
So, sure. It started in 1974. Vietnam veterans and some VISTA volunteers got together. They were just really responding and reacting to the difficulty that their peers, Vietnam vets, were having coming home, at a time when the services were not that great and they weren't really designed for a younger generation of veterans, the Vietnam veterans. And so they got together to work on, you know, peer support, and then they got into employment work, drop-in centers, housing, legal services started very early on. And our boss, Michael Blecker, is one of those Vietnam veterans. He started at Swords in 1976, and he's still he worked his way up to executive director, and he's still there. And we've grown to provide all sorts of services, from housing, transitional housing, permanent supportive housing, employment and training, legal services, drop-in mental health, supportive services, and also policy and advocacy and community education. You know, we've come a long way.
Well, that's a wide spectrum of services. I've been a fan of Swords to Plowshares for several years because, as an advocate for veterans, I have to do continuing legal education. And as you know, your organization has provided legal education for veteran advocates. I've done that through the Practicing Law Institute, so I appreciate all the work that you all do in that regard as far as education. Amy, let's talk more about the legal services, community education, and then go to the supportive housing programs of your organization.
Sure. So the legal services were some of the first services to begin at Swords. And actually, at the time, they weren't, in order to provide legal services to veterans, you have to either be congressionally chartered or recognized. And Swords and a few other organizations actually had to sue to get recognized. But they did. And they started off, doing VA claims, doing a lot of work around discharge matters. And we now have about six or seven attorneys on board, although these many years, and we provide claim services, appeal services to veterans, mostly indigent veterans. Most of our veterans, so, you know, couldn't afford. Well, actually, you can't charge for those services, but you could charge for appeals. But most of our clients are very low income, and we do the claim services. We, because of the very long history, our attorneys are extremely familiar with very complex cases. And also with discharge upgrade cases, whether they be character of service discharge matters with the VA or whether they be upgrades with the boards. And also our attorneys provide that continuing education at PLI, which in order to represent veterans, you have to take continuing education, and that will get you the credit that will give you help with the certification with the VA to do that work. We've been really out in the front as far as discharge upgrades are concerned, and we just have recently provided comments to changes in the federal regulations with regard to character of service determinations in order to get veterans who really need those services. They may have had discharges related to behavior that was caused by PTSD or mental health issues, and yet they have other than honorable discharges, which make them ineligible for the benefits they so desperately need. So we've done a lot of work both in direct services and in policy advocacy.
Well, that's great. I know you all have a program for veterans that are homeless that need housing. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so we actually, Swords Again, groundbreaking, and I can't take credit for this because this is long before my time. I'll just say that Mark and I were, you know, mere children when all this started in the 70s. Right, Mark? Yes.
Exactly.
So, yes. Without disclosing our ages. So, you know, again, housing became clear with working on the ground that this was a real issue. So Sword started working, and I think in the 80s, you know, the public attention to homelessness really came to the fore, and, you know, our leadership and their colleagues around the country recognized that veterans were grossly overrepresented among the homeless and really advocated to get services out of the VA, the homeless services out of the VA, which started GPD, Grant Per Diem Housing, which is transitional. And then we opened our housing at the Presidio that was one of the first permanent supportive housing sites for veterans prior to there being any funding from the VA. And now, of course, permanent supportive housing is funded through HUD-VASH, through, you know, lots of advocacy by our colleagues around the country and our leadership. So we currently have, we house 440 residents in permanent supportive housing in various buildings around town. These are buildings that are veteran specific, and so all the people who live there are veterans, mostly older, mostly with disabilities, well, all with some disabilities. And we have also a couple of transitional programs that can house 40 vets. And those are for, you know, really high acuity veterans, usually coming straight out of the VA mental health programs. And they need, you know, stabilization. They tend to be younger, those clients. And it's a program to get them up on their feet and hopefully either onto independent housing or into permanent housing.
Wow, that's great. That's pretty extensive there. And I'd like to come back after asking Mark a few questions to follow up on some of the topics you talked about. Amy, let me ask Mark. Mark, can you tell us about Swords to Plowshares employment services and supportive services for veterans?
Indeed. Employment and training, obviously, is vital to sort of those folks who could, once they get stabilized and have some kind of housing, that we want them to be able to sustain housing. So employment and training is a key ingredient in that process. What our employment and training folks do, we have HVRP, which is the Homeless Veterans Reintegration Program. It's out of the Department of Labor, so that's most of our ENT funding is from the Department of Labor. And so what that grant allows us to do, it allows us to help homeless veterans or at-risk or low-income veterans with job readiness training and services, short-term certified-based training, resume and cover letter coaching to include mock interviews, and also the funding allows us to help with transportation and meal vouchers, work clothes if needed, tools and other supplies. So this is a vital grant that we have for folks who are coming off the street, becoming stabilized, and are able to make that next step into employment, whether that's security, that's truck driving, maybe EMT, construction, technology, solo training. These aspects to help these folks kind of not just find a job, which is helpful, but also sort of prepare them for a career. So that's the big emphasis on our employment and training dollars, to help folks find those careers to have that income support that they can sustain housing. Now, when it comes to sort of SSVF, which is Supportive Services for Veteran Families, that's another piece. So you have the employment and training piece, but we also the SSVF grant money from the VA allows us to actually get folks off the streets. So that grant includes rapid rehousing. That grant includes eviction prevention, which is homeless prevention. It allows us to have emergency housing for veterans and put them in the hotels up to a certain amount of time, as well as there's a saddle subsidy that can help folks to get into a unit and help pay for that unit with 35% of that unit income for up to 2 years. So these things are really game changers when it comes to help stabilizing folks, getting them off the street, and helping them to get job ready.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. I'm going to turn it over to Rick Hurley. I know Rick and I have had a lot of guests on the show with the themes of vets helping vets. I know that's something you do. So, Rick, you want to?
Yeah, I think my first question, this is for Amy or Mark. These programs are awesome. How do we get all this information about these programs down to the vet who literally are on the street?
I mean, Mark, you can talk about our outreach teams that include, you know, a lot of veterans on our teams.
Exactly. Well, we do have an outreach team, as Amy mentioned, that actually goes out into the streets, whether it's encampments or across the city, as well as the big thing is to partner with community service providers as well as the VA. So in cities and counties, it's called the coordinated entry system. So folks can get to us referrals from the coordinated entry system or the service provider as well as the VA. So we are out and about creating partnerships as well as going out in the streets to sort of find folks as well as communicating with other veteran groups and anyone in the community that is dealing with vulnerable populations. So those are ways in which we find the veteran and sort of help them on that process to get stabilized.
Yeah, because I know.
Yeah, I think because SOAR has been around for so long, there's a lot of word of mouth as well. So that just comes from, you know, being in the community and being out there and being approachable and being, you know, treating clients with respect, and word gets around. So, you know, it's part of the ethos of sorts.
Yeah, no, I'm just, I travel a lot, and I always see homeless vets. You know, Asheville, for instance, has just a significant amount of homeless veterans right in downtown, and mm-hmm. it always bothers me when I see them out there in the parks and trying to figure out, you know, how we're going to help these men, and mostly men, but some women as well. And I was just curious about that. And I'm in a rural part of Florida, and we've got an abundance of veterans that just live in the woods. And periodically I go into the woods to bring pizza and stuff like that to some of these veterans. And whenever I engage in them about getting help, going to the VA, almost across the board, there's this animosity about the VA. There's this feeling of advocacy by the VA toward them as veterans. And when I hear programs like yourself, I'm thinking, God, how can we get these people into these programs? So that's
Well, are these mostly older vets you talk about?
Both. I got Iraqi, Afghanistan, and some Vietnam vets.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, again, you know, having a veteran talk to them who has been through it and is not going to paint a, you know, they're going to paint a true picture that, you know, yeah, there can be bureaucracy and, you know, it can be a pain in the butt, but it's worth it. And then also, the VA is so much better than it was, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, in terms of its treatment and its attitudes toward vets. You know, they get a bad rap, but they have really excellent services. The other thing I'd say about the homeless services is, you know, while we're talking about SWORDS, there are other organizations around the country that run the same programs that we do with the same federal support. So if people look at the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans, they can just look that up on the web, and they have members that are, you know, in every state of the country, and they run programs. Of course, you know, some are stronger than others, and everybody's looking for more resources, but we are not unique. There are other programs that people can look for to find services.
You were talking about your legal services program, and I was curious whether or not you've initiated any of these within some of the law schools around the country. I know in St. Petersburg they have the Veterans Law Clinic at Stetson. Of course, we all know about Yale. West Virginia has a really good one. I'm on the board at Seton Hall Law Center where I graduated, and we're working on trying to start. I'm pushing them to start a Veterans Law Clinic there. Have you been working with any universities?
We actually haven't been at SWORDS, although we work with Yale and some of those other clinics. What we do have is a really strong pro bono network. So we have pro bono attorneys who work for big firms, and we train them, and they'll take on cases for us, and then we help them, you know, so that they're not just left out on their own. They get technical support from our legal staff. And, you know, so we can give them cases that maybe are either less complex or the veteran themselves are more stable. So that's a more appropriate client to place with a pro bono attorney. And then we can reserve the really difficult cases or the clients who have just, you know, multiple comorbidities and perhaps, you know, substance issues and, you know, chronic homelessness, and we can keep them because, you know, it takes a lot of energy and a lot of stick-to-itiveness to overcome those kind of issues with those vets. So we do have the pro bono work, but, you know, we do work with other organizations that do work with law schools.
That's great. I know. I'm just thinking. I'm licensed in the state of New Jersey, and if you're in state, you have a requirement to do, I think it's 14 hours of pro bono work a year. Every lawyer has to do 14 hours a year.
And that's great.
Yeah, I was just wondering if there was a way that they could flip that to helping some veterans.
Yeah. I mean, in California, there's no requirement to do pro bono, but certainly the law firms, you know, like to, you know, put that on their books that they do pro bono, you know, and give back to the community. So that's, and many big law firms have, you know, associates that just work on the pro bono programs within the firm. So that's the way we've done that there. And then, of course, the PLI training that you've done, you know, a lot of our pro bono attorneys take that course, and also they can be anywhere in the country because it's federal law. So, but that's great that New Jersey does that.
Do you find, this is kind of just an overview, how are the newer Iraqi, Afghanistan veterans, In your opinion, how do you think they're doing in terms of adapting to civilian life, and whether it's through your programs or just in general, what are you finding?
Well, I think it's still a challenge. I think a lot of folks, you know, I'm an Air Force veteran. I think it was challenging when I came out years ago, and I think I don't think it's changed that much. I think a lot of our folks come out and are not necessarily sure of what they want to do. And they may not even understand sort of the dynamics of when I was in service, I was an E4, E5, I made this much money, and now I'm going to get out, and now I got to figure out if I'm going to maintain my same lifestyle, what kind of job and or how much money I need to make to maintain that lifestyle. So if I get out in Missouri and I move to California, that's a big difference than maybe staying in Missouri or going somewhere else. So I think I know TAP is being revamped, and they're still tweaking TAP to sort of make it more useful for transitioning veterans, but I still think it's an issue. I think a significant amount of service members transition out, and they're underemployed. They're dealing with mental disabilities. They're experiencing financial stress. I think it's a lot. I think the transition from military to civilian life can be daunting, particularly if one has physical mental disabilities. So I think it's still a challenge. I think benefits are getting better, but I think it's still a challenge of where folks go, where they live, what's the industry like where they're from, and what are the family and or social networks they have, what kind of skill sets do they have, do they have a degree or some sort of certification. All those factor into having a quote-unquote seamless transition, and I think I still see a lot of folks are still having a challenge once they come out. So I think things maybe getting better on some levels, but it's still a real, real challenge for folks to sort of have that transition, particularly if they have a spouse and children. And obviously, as you know, that you know, military spouse unemployment is high, and that has a negative effect on the family income as well. So there's a lot of different issues that can cause a lot of heartache as these folks transition out.
That, you know, so we have kind of two tiers. We've got the older generation where, you know, they've sort of, you know, are suffering with the legacy of neglect after many, many years. And then we have the younger generation or people who are recently separated. And it's so, you know, it still shocks me with all of that outreach that's out there and all the services, how people don't know about them or still feel, well, I mean, of course, there's stigma related to it as well. But sometimes with newly separated veterans, it's harder to see that they might be in trouble. So they might be couch surfing, or they might be, you know, not seeking mental health treatment or having difficulty sleeping or, you know, self-medicating or whatever. But they look okay. So, hey, they're fine. But so, you know, that's where I think it's so important to have the veterans groups, the veteran peer outreach, the clubs on college campuses, the community colleges, to sort of normalize and have those discussions that they can have with one another in order to, you know, get a little bit of help now so that they won't need a lot of help later, and that it's okay to do that.
I read recently that organizations like the American Legion and the VFW are finding that the newest generation of veterans, Iraq and Afghanistan, are not joining their organization. There's probably a number of reasons for that. But Amy, as far as your point, which I completely agree with, about the importance of, you know, veteran-to-veteran help and mentoring, and it reminds me when I was, and I'm sure Mark probably saw this as an Air Force veteran as well, when I was out on active duty, whenever you would PCS from one assignment to another, you would have a sponsor at the new base who would help you, sort of, you know, help you transition to that new base and answer questions. And it strikes me that, you know, veterans that are leaving active duty really would benefit from some sort of mentorship. And I know that that's it's not the same thing as being in the military, but do you see anything? And Mark, this is a question for you. What would you think might help veterans be more successful? I know there's a lot of variables, which you mentioned before, you know, making that tough transition from military to civilian life, but if there were a couple things that you could point to, maybe that you've seen in operation that can help veterans make that sometimes extraordinarily tough transition.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think a part of it is, you know, to do your due diligence you know, before you get out, sort of have some sort of plan, even if you don't know exactly what that is, but where are we going to live? What are the economics like, industry like? Am I going to do the same thing I did in service, or how does that translate into the civilian workforce? I think some of that has to be done, but I also think that employers and folks, you know, concerned citizens on the civilian side has to be able to welcome these folks back in the community, which means, and Amy does a lot of this in our policy work, is about how do you translate what I've done in the military into the civilian workforce? How does HR personnel and recruiters understand that dynamic and help make it an easier transition for folks into employment? How does an employer help bring on veterans and help show them the ropes, whether it's through affinity groups or veteran mentorship, as you talked about, on the job? Like, how are some of these things, how do you create OJT on the job for veterans who need that job experience while they go to school at night on the GI Bill? Things that can be creative sort of help smooth out that transition. But I think it really is about networking, about what does that mean, family connection. So all of that helps that transition, and all of that's going to, it makes it a little easier. But there has to be a plan in place, and again, for just concerned citizens to be involved in the community and reach out and help these folks transition as they should.
Mark, I got a question for you or Amy. In Florida, we have a program called Veterans Court. Do you have such a program in California?
Yeah.
We actually do. We go ahead, Amy.
Are you working with one in Alameda, Mark?
We are. We actually are the mentor coordinator for our Superior Court here in Alameda County. So we actually are involved. We actually sort of interview mentors, you know, and so get them connected to the court so they can help these men and women sort of go through the program and graduate successfully. So we've been involved for a year now here in Alameda County.
That's great.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
in Florida, it's the same. You have a mentor for each veteran, and they see them all the way through, even through the sentence. Usually the sentence is some sort of probationary or probation with a suspended sentence, and the mentor will stay with them throughout the probationary period.
Yeah, that's
really
great. And also, in San Francisco, we've got the Cover Project in the jail. So it's a pod that's just veterans.
Yeah, what's that about?
So while they're in jail, so if they're either awaiting trial or they have a shorter sentence, there's actually a pod in the housing in the jail that's just veterans called the Cover Project. And the Sheriff's Department runs it, but we have staff in there, and then also the VA Veteran Justice Outreach workers go in, so to help them if it's, you know, if it's pretrial, then, you know, figuring out if they could be in Veterans Court or some kind of mitigation to a sentence. If they're going to be, if you know, released soon, then trying to hook them up with services so that it's set up before they get out of jail. Yeah, it's a great program. And there are some other around the country as well. And the courts are wonderful. You know, getting treatment in lieu of sentencing is it just makes so much sense.
Yeah, and I just was actually playing pickleball with a judge here in Citrus County, Florida, and he's going to be, in January, he's going to be running the Veterans Court in our county, and he actually asked me to kind of help them out with it, because they do such great work. I mean, just amazing.
Great. Yeah, you talked to Mark offline about how you do the mentor stuff.
Yeah.
I've got a question for either Amy or Mark. I was really impressed with your organization's website, swordstoplowshares.org. And can either one of you like to talk about the project or the program you have, the resource, the toolbox resource?
Yeah, so that, you know, just recently we put it up, but it was actually, you know, Swords has been around forever, and, you know, we've been asked, you know, are you a national organization? No, we're not. We're not franchised. But, you know, with those 40-plus years of history, there's a lot of institutional knowledge that's been collected. And, again, it's all of our leadership and predecessors at Swords. So we're actually funded by Walmart Foundation to do this resource. So it's toolbox.vet. And there are chapters on veteran culture, on mental health, physical health, access to the VA, running employment programs, running housing programs. And you can either listen to them as podcasts, so you can do that while you're commuting or doing the dishes, or you can read them. There's also, like, great interviews with veterans, whether it's people who have gone through issues and overcome them or about specific issues. So we have, you know, little podcasts on Agent Orange advocacy, Gulf War advocacy, one piece where it's one of our attorneys and some of the veterans on staff talking about the process of filing a claim. So it's really cool, if I do say so myself, and I didn't design it. But it's sort of, there's something for everyone because it covers lots of different issues. And, you know, it's just that everybody doesn't have to reinvent the wheel. If you have new staff coming aboard on, you know, at an agency, they can look and listen to some of those materials to get up to speed and learn a little bit. Or if you are just interested in different aspects of veteran services or issues, there's materials there for you. And it's toolbox.vet.
I found it very helpful, and it along with the continuing education courses that I've taken from the Practicing Law Institute, which you all have sponsored. I mean, what has really impressed me is the literally hundreds of pages of documents we can go back and research, including things like upgrade of discharge. That's something you had mentioned earlier, Amy, about character of service. Anything you'd like to share with us further on that, or any predictions on how things the law might be evolving, hopefully favorably for veterans? Anything on that?
Well, you know, we're hoping that the VA will be more generous with their deciding whether or not a person is a veteran for purposes of VA care, and, you know, really looking at their experience in service and what kind of stressors they were impacted with, and looking at them as a whole person. There has been some really positive things that the rules haven't come out yet, but OTH vets are going to be eligible for VA HUD BASH vouchers coming up soon. So there's recognition that, you know, these veterans are people who really need services, perhaps, you know, even more than their peers, because they might have been suffering with some serious mental health issues, PTSD, brain injury that can really impact behavior and performance. Also, you know, that people are really understanding it. You know, when I started, it was like bad paper. If somebody had bad paper, they were a bad person. And, you know, and now I think there's much more understanding that it's much more complex than that, and that it's not just you're honorable or dishonorable. You know, even looking at the DADT stuff, that if someone has gotten, you know, a bad discharge based on their gender or their sexual identity, that, you know, there should be, that's an injustice that should be addressed.
Well, it's amazing to me that how many veterans we're talking about here. I mean, thousands and thousands of veterans that are affected by this, that you know, that were administratively discharged or court-martialed, and how many were essentially survivors of trauma. Military sexual trauma is something that you know, has really seemed, it's received a lot of attention. But I think it's the number of cases of people that are affected, the number of cases that the VA is dealing with, to me, is just remarkable. And hopefully, I hope that the VA will, as you said, Amy, become more willing to help these veterans and see the connection between the trauma. I mean, after all, you know, a lot of these veterans, you know, they join at 18, 19 years old, and the psychological impact can be, you know, lifelong. Mark, anything that you'd like to share with us further about the employment services? I know, as you said earlier, it's a really big challenge for a lot of veterans to find jobs and really to make that that transition. Any advice you would have for veterans, particularly with today's economy?
Well, look, I just think, like, look, going into the military, you know, the federal government spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to train us. And so as we transition, I just think it's worthwhile and very productive to sort of tap into this pool of individuals to make sure that they can transition into gainful employment. And so I would just, as mentioned earlier, just make sure that veterans can be connected, can understand how to get on LinkedIn and network, and just create opportunities for them to find their way, because it's important that we don't waste those dollars and this talent, because these veterans are able and willing to work. And so and then when they get to where, you know, if they don't find gainful employment, if they don't have access to health care, if they're in financial stress, and then these men and women, they see Amy and I, which is very unfortunate. And then it's just a lot harder to kind of get them back, you know, back on the right path and doing the things that will make themselves and their families happy. So we just want to make sure that, again, employers, all of us are involved in this transition. And to find these talented people in various industries, and we're not limited of what we can do, regardless of what we did in the military. And so to provide opportunity, ample opportunities for us to transition well would be helpful. And that's for all of us, veterans groups, you know, and employers, concerned citizens, all of us to sort of tap into this talent to make it work.
We also do a lot of outreach to employers because the military-civilian divide is very real, and people have an image in their head that, like, every veteran is a combat vet, and they don't understand that, you know, every profession that exists in the military, and
right,
that an MOS is a JOB, and that also
right,
that veterans not only, you know, or service members not only learn the practical skills of their job, but they also learn leadership skills and those soft skills that are so very important, and that, you know, they've had work experience. Being in the military is work. And, you know, they may have been doing, you know, communications or mechanic or HR, administrative or law or, you know, whatever it was, just like, you know, in the civilian world. So breaking down those barriers, talking about military culture and experience, and that these are talented individuals and we just need to translate the experience is really important.
Right. In the state of Florida, the state legislator created a nonprofit organization called Veterans Florida, which is specifically targeting the issue of employment. So I was interested in hearing what you all might be seeing there in California. And the Florida program has, you know, job fairs and offers services, some of which you've already described, which is helping veterans with basic skills like writing a resume that fits a civilian job and interviewing skills and all these things that that they weren't taught in the military. And if they joined the military right out of high school, they never had that life experience. So it's so important, because if they don't get a good job and they're suffering from PTSD, we all know what happens. Things can spiral. Things can spiral downward very quickly, you know. And Rick and I see so many veterans with PTSD, and then substance problems, and then end up in jail, and then or prison, and then getting a job after that. So it's really some challenging issues out there. So before we go, let me go ahead.
If I may, you, Amy, Mark, you may find this interesting. I still handle, when they come up, criminal cases. I used to be a certified criminal lawyer up in New Jersey. And if it's a veteran and it's in federal court and the veteran asks me, I'll I'll step up and help him. And I had one who I'm also doing his benefit case for. And it wasn't a difficult case. I mean, he was in the wrong for sure. It was a Social Security fraud case. And it was in Mobile, Alabama. And the judge was the first assistant for, he was the former attorney general with Trump, Sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And so going in, you know, I was trying to get some feedback from the local lawyers about what to expect. And when they told me she was his first assistant, I was like, oh, brother, that's not going to go well. Anyway, the government wanted a 36-month sentence, and he had one prior. And I was trying to figure out how I could mount some sort of sentencing defense. You're not going to fix the case. He was wrong. But he had a gambling problem. And he also had a very serious PTSD problem from Iraq and Afghanistan. And I had done my research and found that just like alcohol and drugs, gambling is an addiction. And his coping mechanism for his PTSD was gambling.
Yep.
And the gambling got him in trouble. And that's what in turn led to the Social Security fraud, because he and his wife were taking care of an elderly person who died. And instead of letting the Social Security know that he died, they kept collecting the checks.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had a gambling problem. So I was looking for the judge to divert the sentence from the guidelines, which was between 30 and 36 months, down to between 8 and 10 months. And you know, the government, of course, was opposing that in the worst way. And I couldn't believe it. She listened for 20, 25 minutes as I explained his whole PTSD issue and how it connected to his gambling problem. And sure enough, she sentenced him to 8 to 10 months. Then I asked if he could do it under house arrest. And she said, "Mr. Hurley, I think you've gotten enough out of this one." And so he had to do a little bit of time, but he's out now. But I just found it. The point of the story is that, you know, there are judges. If you really do your homework, and if there are any lawyers out there listening to this, if you do your homework and you have something like that, there's so many things to really research about PTSD and the effects of PTSD on our veterans. And I was trying to find something, and sure enough, that's what worked. But
that's fantastic.
Yeah, and I take my hat off to the judge. I couldn't really, you know, say it on the record to her, but I just thought it was brilliant that she was, one, willing to listen, and two, willing to accept what I was proposing. And, of course, when we walked down the hallway, the government was a little furious. And they thought about appealing the sentence. I said, come on, you can't do that.
No.
Right.
Well, you know, the state of California has, in the criminal code, has a defense like that the behavior, you know, the arresting, you know, the felonious or whatever kind of behavior it was, if it can be connected to PTSD or military service, that can be a mitigating circumstance. And I, you know, I don't know off the top of my head what that code section is, but I know that California and a number of other states have that, but you know, the defense bar might not know about them, and to know how it's important to ask about veteran status, and to, you know, when you're interviewing a client, to pull out those issues, to engage in, you know, trauma-informed interviewing and you know, really be able to explore, you know, how you can really help that individual.
Yeah.
And I think another thing, if I could just chime in real quick.
Yeah.
I have a client, a male client, victim of military sexual assault, and you know, as we all know, victims of sexual crimes often don't report, and I think anecdotally at least, male victims are even less likely to report.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of them. And the point being, after he left the service, his life spiraled down. He spent 4 years in prison for drug offenses. He spent another couple years in, for other offenses. And if someone on the face had not, looked into it and asked him and dug deeper to find out, you know, what were the root causes, they would discover it was mm-hmm. pretty horrific stuff that went on, you see. And that's something that I think, Amy, as you said, you know, the civilian bar and others, they were dealing with veterans, it might be worthwhile to look into. Now, we're running out of time in a few minutes. I want to give both of you an opportunity to maybe talk about any big issues that you see, on the near horizon, and also how can our listeners learn more about your organization, and how can they donate to help your organization?
Well, I'll be real quick and leave the rest to Amy. But the big thing that we're dealing with obviously is housing, right? So we need more affordable and deeply affordable housing for low income, at risk, and homeless veterans. So to think about that in all your cities and counties, to think about the way to create more housing for folks who need it, and that's our big thing here. We have services and support services. But that housing issue is really key, and so just keep that on your mind as you think about better homelessness. That the big piece is housing, and so
housing. Okay.
Absolutely, housing is a huge issue. Another issue is aging veterans. So we have, you know, that's the largest cohort of veterans. We have, you know, Vietnam veterans who are in their, you know, 70s, 80s. Many of them are, you know, doing just fine, but there's a lot of them who, you know, didn't get those kinds of services and went down that spiral that we're talking about. And to, you know, make sure that they're able to age in place in permanent supportive housing, and age in dignity and get them off the streets and into safe housing with supportive services is really important to me. As far as learning more about SWORDS, our website is SWORDS, SWORDS, +2-Plowshares, spelled PLOWSHARES.org, or you could just Google us, and you'll find, you know, all the services that we do, ways to donate, also the toolbox.vet materials are on there. So you can just, you know, look us up online.
Well, that's super. I'd like to thank Amy Fairweather and Mark Walker for being our guests this evening and for sharing all their insights and knowledge and telling us about SWORDS to Plowshares. I want to thank both of you and pass on to everyone in your organization our gratitude for all that you do for veterans, not only in California but nationwide, because, as I say, I've personally benefited from your training materials. I want to thank you for that. I hope you'll both stay in touch, and you have an open invitation to come back on our show anytime and keep us updated.
All righty, fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you both.
Thanks, Mark.
Have a great week.
Okay, you
too.
Take care. Again, we'd like to thank Amy Fairweather and Mark Walker for being our guests, and we hope everyone has benefited from what they shared with us. Rick, why don't we go over to you?
Yeah, okay, and it's a great segue into our Coaching in the Care program. This program helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life, as we just discussed for the last hour. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching in the Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. The program number is 1-888-823-7458. Again, toll-free number is 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, if you did not write it down right now, 1-888-823-7458. Help you help your veteran. In addition, I'd like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line. call that number at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Again, that number is, and write it down, ladies and gentlemen, 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. This could be the most important phone call you make on behalf of a veteran. Back to you, David.
Thanks, Rick. I know one of the issues that Mark Walker just mentioned was the issue of veteran homelessness and also supportive services for veterans and families. And I was I read the VA website every week and their press releases to try to keep up with developments. And one that I read recently was that the VA announced that it was expanding its initiatives to provide grants to nonprofit organizations with that are helping veterans with housing rental assistance. These are for basically extremely low-income veteran households under the VA Supportive Services for Veteran Family Program. And the VA has a lot of programs to help homeless. You can go to their website, which is easy to remember. It's va.gov/homeless. And I know, Rick, you and I have had guests on this program over the last several years from a number of organizations talking about housing and homelessness issues, whether it's Habitat for Humanity or the Tiny Home Program that we've had a guest on from Kansas City. So there's a lot going on across the country to deal with the veteran homeless issue, and hopefully, I mean, it's, those lessons can also be expanded to the much larger homeless problem that we face in many parts of the country. So again, the VA website is va.gov/homeless. I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in. I'd like, again, to thank our special guests this evening, Amy Fairweather and Mark Walker from Swords to Plowshares. And I'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsome. We hope you all will tune in next week, same time, same station, which is 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, 5 p.m. Mountain Time, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time here on bbsradio.com Station 1. We hope you'll tune in. Until then, we hope you have a safe week and a great week. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.